We knew the economy was going to turn at some point, but you never really can be prepared for timing or speed of change.
I hope this cycle we're in doesn't take us back to the days of regulatory purgatory, where everything we did had consequences.
As the world continues to change, we have found out we need to be even more nimble as we move forward.
By requiring things like business continuity planning and pandemic plans, we need to think proactively about what we need to do in the future.
We better grab our helmets and start getting prepared today.
Banking is a risk business, but in today's environment, we are being faced with uncertain times. Financial institutions have always had partners who could help evaluate, address, and mitigate risk. But today, they need to lean on those partners more than ever. Welcome to Bank on Whitfleet. Each episode will feature discussions around industry issues, hot topics, and current trends, giving you an insider's look at how top performers and professionals are staying ahead of the curve. All right, let's get into today's conversation.
Welcome, everybody. Today's guests are Tiffany Carlin, principal, and Mike Vaccarella, partner here at Whitfleet. Both are recognized leaders in their field and are with us today to talk about the state of senior living and home health. We're excited to talk with both of them about some of the most significant trends in assisted living and home health care. We know from our clients that financial institutions often provide financing options and other banking services for these facilities, and are interested in learning about the future of the industry. Let's start with Tiffany. Tiffany, thank you for being here today. Would you provide our listeners some information about you?
Yeah, that's great. We're very excited about being welcomed by you and your audience today. My name is Tiffany Carlin. As mentioned, I have been in the senior services space for about 20 years. And I say senior services as now we're all aware of this field transforming into not just being a space that which we live, but really the space that which care is provided and or living space is provided, and the continuum of how we're serving both the elderly and the disabled population. And so it's been a calling and a mission that I've been able to be in serve in this industry for so long and in this space of reimbursement consulting. And I'll tell you, it's been even more, that mission has been brought forth even more after the past 2 years in COVID. So excited about sharing some of the wealth of information that I know, and I'm sure there's definitely going to be more to come. But thanks again, Robert, for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you, Tiffany. Mike, can you tell us a little bit about the work you do?
Sure, Robert. Thank you. My name is Michael Vaccarella. I've been with Whitfleet for a number of years now. I think I've eclipsed five or six, but at this for almost 24 years. I lead Whitfleet's private equity and transaction advisory practice. So I get the excitement of being on the monetary side for who's gonna come into these spaces, whether it be home health or senior living, and you know, put together what would be a nice package to buy or invest in those two highly trending areas for healthcare. So I would say, you know, our private equity up through from the lower end of private equity to the middle and large end of private equity are all very interested, and I lead the due diligence side of it as well when that's coming by. So I get kind of both ends, both the financing end and the accounting and due diligence end. So happy to be here today to talk through and have a nice little conversation with Tiffany as well.
Fantastic. Thank you both. I know you're very busy and it's great to have you on today. Let's jump into our conversation. To begin with, what are some of the macro trends in the industry, maybe occupancy, aging population? We know there seems to be a conversation around haves and have-nots, the rise of managed care. Tiffany, can you start us off?
Absolutely. You know, it is it's a dynamic conversation, obviously, right now with the past 2 years surviving in the pandemic. And what's interesting is we used to say, and in the providers in our space, probably even as of last year, mid last year, we're just kind of waiting for this pandemic to pass, right? And I think all of us as a nation, as a world, have been waiting for it to pass. And quickly now the conversations have very much shifted to being all, this being a new norm. And how are we going to shift our mindset into what the new norm looks like in the world of healthcare and service delivery of different models and unique models? And so obviously there's been a major impact, Robert, over the past few years as it related to occupancy, but it also as it related to, you know, the increase of utilization of home and community-based services. So some industries in our field got positively affected by this pandemic, while others negatively. But the pro is everything now is on the rise because we still have an aging population. We still have people that require care at all different levels. And so we're seeing that come up in our world. So I'd like to just share with you a few pieces of information that I derive from being, I read a lot in the senior housing news, and there's also something called skilled nursing news, as well as my friends at American Healthcare Association, and always appreciative of Mark Parkinson's, the CEO's insights. So as of recent, we are seeing that our needs-based, okay, what we call needs-based, your assisted living market, your skilled nursing market, that is now starting to rise as far as occupancy levels are concerned. So we're at now assisted living kind of pre-pandemic, we were seeing about 85% occupied. Currently, again, we've seen an uptick now with the pandemic over the past, I would say the past two quarters, at hitting about 78%. So that's a good rise. And frankly, this the fourth quarter, despite Omicron coming in, we really did, that was a significant increase for our senior living space. In the nursing home market pre-pandemic, we were at an 86-87% occupancy. We're great as at 77, just recently, 77% occupancy. And I'll tell you, even as of, I would say, Q1, Q2 of last year, of 2021, we were at 72, 73. So It's moving in the right direction. Again, these are both needs-based, and so we're starting to see that the hospitals are seeing more patients. We're starting to see that, again, long-term care is always going to be that something that is there, that is necessary. And going back to your conversation of the haves and the have-nots, you know, long-term care is one portion of skilled nursing, right? You're there for the length of your life. And that may be under Medicare, and then eventually under Medicaid or private. And people will always need and will always outlive their means to some extent. There's going to be a population of people that you're going to have that may outlive their means. That's why Medicaid is so important to the senior services space. And so we are seeing now where that occupancy rate in the long-term care space is increasing. Now, it's slowly on the trend where long-term care is different than some of our Medicare fee-for-service, you know, rehab-based focused senior services, where the hospitals are just now starting to get back into delivering some of those, you know, hip fracture patients and things like that that weren't really critical in nature, that during COVID may not have been as needs necessary at the time as an emergency, but are now slowly getting added back to the calendar. So we will continue to see an uptick in that rehab focused skilled nursing, but that may take a little bit longer. Our independent living market, again, our independent livings, they went on lockdown. We really didn't see a huge decline in independent living, but we're also not seeing where that's rapidly increasing post the pandemic, again, because it's primarily, you know, a home for those that are in that senior market. So pre-pandemic, we were looking at 89%, about 90% occupied independent living. And post-pandemic, we're at 83%. Again, continuing to be on the rise. So, and excited to see that as we kind of unbury ourselves into this world of what is to come. Now, again, occupancy to that degree, we work with not only skilled nursing facilities, standalone skilled nursing facilities, but also with CCRCs, those multi-level retirement communities, in addition to home health and hospice. And I can say, you know, the trend now is, it has always been, right, home health. People did look to, you know, do I really want to be in a nursing home, or I'd like to be in the home health space? But the trend is now even greater into what are some other new models that are entering in the market. And I'll go into that in a little bit, but I'll pause there with kind of where that market has shifted, how the occupancy has gone up, because I do believe that's also shifting the stage as to, you know, where investors are looking, that I'm sure Mike has some thoughts on.
Sure, Mike.
Yeah, where the investors are looking. That's, you know, that's the, you know, $64,000 question. I think, you know, what we see, you know, like in any other industry, there's what's called a, you know, a kind of a stair-stepping life cycle to the investment pool. You know, we see very much, because of the macroeconomics in this, and the aging populations and the boomers retiring and wanting more in their retirement and how they're going to be taken care of, we see it, and we've seen it happen. You know, we see, you know, I'll say, you know, groups of smaller investors trying to take on, you know, things in home health or, you know, elder care. And then as they can amass some, I'll say, you know, it's amass a little bit larger of an entity, then you see traditional private equity looking at it. And then as traditional private equity buys, builds, and then wants to monetize, it's the real estate investment trusts that are starting to get involved, because obviously there's a real estate component to it. So we're seeing lots of, at this point, private equity was selling everything that wasn't nailed down over the last 18 to 24 months, because it was such a frothy market. The real estate investment trusts have been stepping in, both on a private and public perspective, to be their exit plan. You know, the most interesting things that I'm seeing with that, and kind of a tail end, is trying to understand what risks they're walking into from an investment. And the more technology that continues to become in the forefront in home health, in, you know, senior living facilities, that's the kind of things that people are looking at to invest in. You know, we recently, you know, read some articles on, I think Stanley Healthcare has been working on, you know, what's like almost like a VR, AR, and AI predictive for some of the residents. If they can notice them walking down the hall, and their gait changes, or they see more instability. So we're seeing, you know, everybody wants to own and see the revenue stream from what should be a very nice business model because of the macroeconomics. But what they don't want is the risks that come along with it, especially from a publicly traded entity or a high level private equity fund that doesn't want bad press. You know, there were quite a few private equity funds that saw bad press over the last, I'll say, 6 or 7 years for negligence in that type of healthcare facility. So we like to see the evolution of what to de-risk some of those investments where that's falling. So that's a big plus. So I think that's, you know, from my perspective, you know, looking at those type of technology-based healthcare is going to make a big difference in where the dollars are coming from an investor standpoint.
You know, Excellent. Mike, if I can jump in here, if that's okay.
Sure.
You know, it's interesting too, is we're kind of focused on where the market is headed and what investors are looking for. I think what the tenor of conversation has been is, while, and I agree with you, there's been some interesting press that's kind of come out of where COVID started and everything in the beginning of it getting hit so hard in the nursing home space. And now what we're really seeing is that shift of the resilience of this industry and what they've been able to do to pivot so that they can properly care for the people that they serve ongoing. And I think that has really brought a lot of new people, new investors into the market. It's brought a lot of new banking relationships that weren't really looking at this market maybe this is something that I should get involved in. To that degree, though, too, we're also seeing, it's funny, when I was reading one of the articles, one of my colleagues at Ziegler was quoted in saying, Chris Oates saying that interest rates basically also, right? The interest rates in this market have created something where there's such an easy access to capital that, you know, these people are vying now to get into the nursing home business, but we're seeing a huge amount of market consolidation. So you got these bigger providers that say, hey, I've got the opportunity for cash, I'm going after it. And these smaller providers that can sell at a premium and when the times are tough too. And so we're seeing a huge amount of, and specifically in that, you know, kind of standalone freestanding nursing home market consolidation going into some of these larger providers that, like you said, can take on and transform themselves into being, you know, utilizing the technology of tomorrow that can really pivot because the market is heading into being a very much a managed care market.
Yeah.
And if you're going to be in a managed care market, your ability to make money shrinks. Negotiating power has to be at a bigger and grander scale. And so how are they going to do that as they transition forward? So, you know, again, access to capital easy, but with that in mind, it's also consolidating the market to be into the next phase of where we see healthcare and the healthcare service delivery model and housing going.
Right. Yeah, well, you can definitely hear who lives this and breathes this day in and day out. And Tiffany's in that space so well. And I think, you know, I couldn't agree more. I think there's just this, you know, rush to where resiliency. I think private equity has been that way, and any investor, when they see a market be resilient through a downturn or through a major shock, which obviously COVID was for you know, senior living and pretty much, you know, whether it would be and all throughout the managed care, you know, and home health and hospice, you know, now everybody's like, well, they survived COVID. You know, I mean, our biggest thing looking at COVID overall was, you know, it did its darndest to try to, you know, basically eliminate everybody over the age of 65. And, you know, whether it be through good old human immunity and you know, and vaccine, you know, procedures, you know, it really kept it at bay, and we didn't lose as many as you know, was once feared when it first started. So the resiliency factor here has just been, I think, what's going to continue to drive more investors to the market. And it's frankly, it's ripe for it. It's the macro, like we said, the macroeconomics aren't going to change. You know, people aren't going to stop getting older at this point. So, you know, probably the next thing I thought about kind of bringing to the forefront would be more along the lines of, you know, I would say, you know, as the investment dollars come in, it's how do these senior living facilities compete for talent and staff to keep that model going? I think, you know, I'm sure, you know, I'll let Tiffany jump in, but there's going to be some real, you know, fight for talent. You know, we're seeing it across every industry when, you know, there's lower, you know, unskilled labor. And then, you know, we call medium skilled labor, and certified labor really ends up being a fight for that talent. And I think, you know, these groups inside, you know, managed care and, you know, CCRCs and wherever you want to go is going to have that same impact. So that's going to affect valuations going down the road if they've got multiple places where they can't fill work and fill staff. So I'll let Tiffany jump in and talk a little bit about that.
Mike and Tiffany, maybe for the listeners who aren't as familiar with the industry, Tiffany, could you really give a good definition when you talk about managed care in the spectrum? So for our listeners who maybe aren't as familiar, what you mean by that, I think would be a good segue into the talent that the gaps that you're going to talk about.
Sure, absolutely. So the managed care space really is multitudes of different conversations that we're talking about, but essentially our focus when Obamacare kind of came into place many years ago is how do we care for the patient to specifically that patient's needs, versus getting here's a dollar amount for this specific reason why you're at the hospital or at your skilled nursing facility or whatever that is really understanding that full patient's needs and caring for them throughout the continuum. Before our senior services industry was competing with hospitals, right? To get a nurse, you know, most nurses are taught to go into the hospital space, the physician space. They're really not looking at the geriatric world and learning gerontology in college, where they want to go out of college and go into a senior services home or a home health setting or a hospice setting. It takes a unique, special person that kind of knows about the industry, really cares about, you know, caring for the elderly or the disabled. And so now that's even stretched even further, because now this workforce wants to work at home. The ability to be, you know, to exist in a flat world where anyone can work anywhere has put a strain on, do these nurses or administrators or whoever else it is want to go back into a very stressful environment? Do we have, as senior services providers, the ability to pay for the quality of work that we need in caring for these people? Again, most of our rates are tied to Medicare, managed care, Medicaid. So what does that mean? We're, you know, how do we have the ability, like other private institutions do, to increase wages when we only have so much to give with the reimbursement that's coming back to us? And so many states are looking now to how are we increasing, again, wages for maybe our CNAs, so that they have more of an interest to come into this field, a field that which is really driven by a mission, and want to serve. But, you know, it's, again, been an extremely tough market to do that. Most of our nursing homes are occupancy, and our home health agencies and our hospices, occupancy or the ability to serve can go up today. They just don't have the people to support it. So yeah. It's not just about the lack of wanting, the lack of people wanting to go into those. We still have the silver tsunami. It's the ability to provide the care that is necessary with those that they have to serve.
I think that's a real insight for people who aren't as familiar with the industry as you are, Tiffany. And what a great explanation to have that link between what every industry is facing, talent and occupancy, and someone really needs to be inside to understand that. So thank you.
And Robert, I would chime in a little bit. Tiffany, you know, kind of alluded to that silver tsunami that we all kind of have a little chuckle about with the boomers retiring. But, you know, the salt and peppers are watching, and you know they're planning their retirements, you know, over the next 10 years, you know, some of them even 6 or 7, and watching what's going on today. Their kids are watching what's going on today, because this is stuff that's going to be repeatable. You know, is the model going to change or is it not? And you know, a lot of that has to do with you know, the investments that are coming in, as well as the management of those facilities today. Like Tiffany said, like if they can't be managed, you know, to a point where their revenue, you know, their revenue is creating, you know, a bottom line positive, you know, and seeing a cap rate of what it would be deemed as in good investable assets. We're not, you know, this is going to cause a major hiccup. So the staffing shortage to me is probably, you know, as we see it across any industry, is causing some major issues for future longevity. So, you know, mentioning the cap rate, I'm sure most of the listeners, you know, understand that, but you know, that's in a facility of this, of, you know, elder care facilities and senior housing, whether it be independent living or assisted living, you know, memory care, skilled nursing homes, you know, they measure their income and then divide it by what's the, you know, the cost of the real estate. So that's the cap rate. So, you know, we're seeing, you know, cap rates that took a pretty big dip, you know, a point and a half, you know, from, let's just call it an average of 7.8, you know, dip down to 6.3 during COVID in 2020, and then have snapped back and stabilized, you know, you're going to see things, you know, skilled nursing, you know, taking that out of the equation, which typically that things, skilled nursing is up usually in the 12s. But they're, you know, looking at independent living and assisted living, you know, those are, you know, definitely in the, you know, we'll call it high sixes and sevens, you know, up through, you know, eight and a quarter. So, you know, that's, it's come back, you know, highs, probably the biggest high we had in cap rates was probably in 14 and 15. And it's slowly declined since then. But the rebound in 21 looks nice. So that is, you know, is going to be, you know, indicative for investment.
Great. Let's talk a little bit about financing and capital. You mentioned certainly investors, private equity. For those who maybe are a bank or a lender, what is their role in what's going on? I know both of you had touched a little bit about the financing in the industry. Would you both speak to that?
You know, I mean, we see, you know, lending, you know, traditional lending institutions being, you know, continuing to be a big part of this. Obviously, the real estate side will continue to be what I would consider hot, you know, and definitely in the respective markets. You know, I mean, obviously we've all watched the news and where most of our seniors are flocking to. There's really never snow. So, you know, most of what we're seeing is, you know, in the, you know, the southern states, you know, where we call it, you know, Florida, Arizona, Texas, you know, we're seeing, you know, we're just seeing flock to there. So I think that piece of where it's going, it's going to push the, you know, banking institutions as well as, you know, private equity is going to go chasing that as well. But, you know, the banking side will never not be a part of this. That it has to be leveraged in order to make this work. So you know, I would say, you know, from my perspective, you know, it's the other players that are really flowing into the marketplace, which would be more you know, I would say your non traditional lending, whether it be, you know, mezzanine debt and or, you know, traditional private equity, is gonna be kind of at the forefront in some of this. But our traditional banks, as they should be jumping all over this.
Great. I agree. I think that some of the things from, you know, whether you've been doing this in the banking world for quite some time and in the senior services space, or you're one of those banks that are kind of looking at this industry and saying, wow, maybe this is something I need to get into. I get quite a few of those calls. You know, what we have seen, you know, pre-COVID of new construction coming up quite a bit, you know, is definitely on a downturn. We're only slowly seeing that increase, about 3.2%, I believe, is the last numbers that I saw. You know, a lot to do, again, with the environment of not having access to talent to be able to, you know, as well as to build, and not having access to the resources to do that. And so those are things to consider in the banking world. Also, you know, as I mentioned, this goes back to kind of market consolidation of, you know, maybe you're not financing a new project, a new build, but you're looking at some of these larger providers that are in the market to acquire. Even new, we're seeing again, I think Mike and I are constantly getting calls of people that we've never heard of before that all of a sudden, you know, are entering into this interest into buying home health and hospice, quite a bit of home health and hospice, or buying, going from the senior living space and going into, you know, more of the continuum. Hey, I've been a senior living provider since the start of our company. We want to look at what other avenues and models we can play into. And I think from that degree, you know, it is really up to the banking institutions to know the continuum and to ensure that the people that you are financing also understand the continuum. Do they understand the market that they're getting into? Just because a healthcare space is providing healthcare for a similar clientele doesn't make it the same. They get paid differently, they operate differently, the world is very different. And I think vetting, you know, who we are backing from a finance perspective is extremely important, and us knowing enough to be dangerous to be able to say, to ask the right questions as they're looking for other opportunities in the market. Things are changing so rapidly, and there's so many new models that are coming into the healthcare continuum that, you know, staying abreast of what that is going to be vital for, I think, you know, new finance to come in.
Yeah, agreed. And I think that the banks have always been a little more disciplined than the investor core. You know, I look at, you know, like you said, some of these brand new funds or brand new, you know, investment groups that are trying to put together, they put together a nice board, they put together a good investment thesis, but, you know, then they're going out to raise capital or raise debt financing on a deal by deal basis. And Tiffany, you're right. I mean, the bank should be doing their homework, doing their diligence on not only, you know, the group that's going out there, but, you know, they're scrounging for deals, you know, to try to do something to get into the space. And I tell everybody, you know, when something's hot, somebody's going to get burned at some point. You know, you're not going to be immune to it. And we don't want to see the banks be the ones getting burned in it. So I think that's, you know, from my perspective, thinking about the diligence side as well, I mean, that's typically what we're here for, is to, you know, not only vet the deal, but be able to work with the banks to understand, you know, who these investors are, to keep them from getting burned. So yeah, I would completely agree. As that process goes, it's definitely worth getting into, but you know, trust but verify, like usual.
Tiffany, are there anything that our listeners should be aware of as far as COVID factors that are still present or that we should know about in the industry, things that are impacting it? I know in preparing for this, you're so steeped in the industry, so I'd love your insights on that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great question. Again, going back to my initial thought around, this is not going to pass, right? COVID is the new normal, and how we are going to conform to that. I was at an American healthcare event where they were citing that the cases of obviously a flu and deaths because of flu have gone down so tremendously because of the usage of so much greater PPE that, you know, we're now preventing not just COVID, but other things that were causing illness and death from our senior population. And so to that end, we're continually going to be in this public health emergency while we're seeing any uptick in new variants with COVID, in deaths in hospital, in the occupancies of hospitals rising to treat this. And as this public health emergency continues forward, that is going to be access to additional money. Okay. And what I mean by that is how much more that Health and Human Services will be doling out. You know, they just recently had our providers apply for phase 4. How much more the states are going, and the state Medicaid programs are going to be supporting these providers through this difficult time. That has continued forward. Most of the states are tying their money to the public health emergency. How is Medicare and how they're getting, and how these providers are getting paid under Medicare, how they're going to respond to that? Because again, we've had, you know, there's been some postponements of payment delays, of different ways that we were going to change how Medicare gets paid to our, you know, depending on the type provider type. A lot of things were put on hold during this time that the public health emergency is going on. And I say that because, you know, we're seeing a crazy market. We all are, as it relates to people, you know, in this investor heavy, what is going to happen with people buying and selling. But I don't know if we still have more and yet to come, because we still have people that are holding on to, hey, I've got money coming, I can survive this and thrive through this, what should I do next? And some strategic thinking around that. And so I think there is still a horizon of either, you know, organizations that are going to take some of this support and do something more with it to develop their organization into the future of what kind of new models do I want to look to? Do I want to go into some of this home and community-based services that we're seeing on the rise? How can I improve technology in my facility or in my space so that I can better not only alleviate some of this COVID, but alleviate anything else, all other barriers of other diseases that are coming in? What do I do to use to bring healthcare through an iPad, right? And through technology to deliver care. So we're shifting our thinking and we're utilizing some of this money to be able to shift our thinking. And I think that's an important part of this. The other part is though too, is for those that experienced despair, loss, significant drops in census, and those folks who have been dying in various capacities of different healthcare institutions, I don't think, again, that they realized that this was still going on and now expenses still continue to rise. And there hasn't been anything else that's been said, at least thus far, that, hey, yeah, the government's got another couple billion dollars to send out to us. So we're going to see it going back to even that kind of have and have not conversation of who were the organizations that have made that significant shift in what they're going to do and how they use this pool of money to make sure that they can survive it and thrive into the future. And who are those that the rainy days just keep coming and they don't have any more money on the horizon to be able to survive it. And so it's going to be a dynamic and an interesting year this year to see where we're going. And those people, it's watching those providers that haven't decided that, hey, what is it that my new normal looks like? And how do I transition as a nursing home that may have been long-term care into a home that people want to be a part of? Or how do I get into other new types of services so that I can be a benefit for the future? There's going to be a loss for those people.
Yeah, I would echo that. You know, and then toss on, you know, we've been so, you know, laser focused on what COVID has done and what COVID is doing. You know, the aging population is still, and I think COVID actually exploited it. We're still dealing with, you know, diabetes, obesity, you know, things that are really going to be affecting the, you know, the continuing care market, just for this sheer fact that, you know, as we talked about earlier, staff can only do so much. Staff can only move and lift and do those things. You know, you typically think, you know, someone who's in a facility that, you know, is aged out at, you know, 89 and, you know, they're little and frail. Well, we're not seeing that, you know, as well. So I think there's a lot to be watched in, you know, how we all get healthier earlier on. So our aged years are a little different. You know, we've seen, you know, we've done quite a bit of work in the insurance side, as well as, you know, on doing, you know, diligence and some deals in the insurance side. We saw, you know, patient mobility being a huge factor, and what needs to be done for and being able to, you know, help the staff move, you know, larger individuals and, you know, as they age and are becoming, you know, not being able to walk. So I think there's just a lot there. And I think, you know, COVID's kind of been the big spike, but there's definitely more that we have to continue to look at and see. And that's, you know, going to have to be a little bit of a changing model, not just adding PPE, but adding, you know, additional, I would say, you know, just additional CapEx that has to be done in some of the nursing homes and facilities to negotiate and manage the actual patient that's coming in.
Well, it sounds like topics for other podcasts in the future.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Tiffany and Mike, what an absolute pleasure to have you both as guests today. I know that the experience you bring to this conversation is immense, and we appreciate having you for the conversation. Any final remarks you want our listeners to remember from today?
First, just thank you for having us. Very excited to, I think this is my first podcast that I've done, so I love it. I would say that COVID brought a lot of, obviously, sorrow and sadness, and wasn't a great time for all of us over the past few years. But it also gave our senior services space an opportunity to shine. And I think we're just at the cusp of that. And I know in all of these associations that I serve on in boards and various other capacities, I'm anxious to see what the future brings because they have great strategic initiatives and these providers are ready for the future and ready to fight for that and ready to transform because they genuinely care about the people that they serve. And I think as lenders or bankers or anybody that can support any other vendors that are supporting those people should know that that's a great horse to bet on is people that genuinely want to win. I'm excited for what, you know, yes, COVID brought us a lot of negative lights, but it sure opened up the window to new doors of opportunity. Thanks great. Again.
Of course. Pleasure. Mike, anything else?
Well, I'll leave it with something a little more touchy-feely. I think, and thank you again for the opportunity to be on. But, I always hear the strength of our society really is in the strength of our elders and how we take care of them. This is near and dear. I lost my 97-year-old last of the greatest generation during COVID. I was blessed to have my grandmother for 97 years, but it's a testament to what those generations were able to endure, and hopefully the next up and coming generations of boomers are going to have that same fortitude. But they can't be abandoned, and I think that's how the strength of our facilities and the strength of the investments that are being put into these facilities to upgrade them and keep them technologically competent and be part of the next generation's, health as they age is going to be extremely important. And I think it's, it'll continue to be a great investable space as well as, for all of our friends on the banking podcast here, a great place to bank. So I'll leave you with that.
Thank you for putting the human perspective on that, Mike. And to our listeners, thank you for allowing us to share some ideas with you. As always, reach out with any questions or comments. We'll make sure to give you the information on how to contact Tiffany or Mike for a deeper conversation. We look forward to hearing from you and having you listen to our next podcast. In summary, today's podcast was really about home health care and senior living and the spectrum of services that encompasses that industry. We know that there are many players looking at financing and investment. The industry is coming out of the vast array of changes that occurred during COVID, so it's important to understand what is going on with any particular investment or lending situation you may make. And certainly, like every industry, the ability for companies to service people that they want to service is really predicated on finding the right talent. And so we know that's a theme.
You've been listening to Bank on Whitfully. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast and tune into the next episode as we feature insights from other leaders in the financial industry and even more ways you can stay ahead of the curve.